way back before the Sequined White Club, the Animal Menagerie, Wacko Jacko. Hey, long before his 50th birthday last week, Michael Jackson and his brothers were already superstars. When the Jackson 5 took the stage, teenage girls, black and white, went crazy. The group cranked up bubblegum soul hits, and their crossover appeal made the Jackson 5 a music powerhouse. Listen to me, baby, that's all you gotta do. Oh, ABC, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. Mania also made the band a cash machine for Motown Records. There were Jackson 5 dolls, coloring books, even a TV cartoon show.
Gee, fellas, where'd you all learn to groove like that?
Our mom and dad taught us, ma'am. They're fine musicians.
Well, they must be, because you boys are wonderful.
Hey, you dig that? Miss Diana Ross thinks we're wonderful.
I dig.
This week, the Jackson 5 will be given the Icon Award at the Urban Music Awards in Los Angeles. All the brothers have said they'll attend, except Michael. Stephen Davis ghost wrote Michael Jackson's autobiography, Moonwalk, and he's on the line now. Welcome, Stephen Davis.
Hi, how are you?
Let's get right to the music. Jackson 5's first single, I Want You Back, from 1969. Stephen Davis, what made that song such a breakthrough?
As soon as you played that, Jackie, my shoulders started to twitch, my knees began to tremble. All of a sudden it was 1969 again, and it was the most exciting new pop group since Sly and the Family Stone. Just great to hear that again.
Back too, and it made me think, well, I was one of those crazy young girls listening to this group. And let's set the scene. It's 69. Who's writing the music for them? What's going on? Why are they suddenly so popular?
Well, let me give you a tiny bit of background. There were five Jackson brothers, and they all grew up in Gary, Indiana. And they were discovered by a local record producer for Steeltown Records, but then their contract was bought out by Berry Gordy at Motown, the great soul label. And I Want You Back was written by what Motown called the Corporation, which was their in-house songwriting staff.
But how did they become a mainstream phenomenon for Motown?
Well, you have to remember, they went on Ed Sullivan, and people got a load of Michael Jackson dancing at age 7. And so, went beyond the radio into incredible success on television, and that's, of course, what spawned the cartoon show and kept them as a viable act, really, for 15 years.
Okay, music critic, pick a favorite Jackson 5 song for us. That should be easy.
Never Can Say Goodbye is my favorite all-time Jackson 5 song. Remember, this was Michael at 13, and, you know, he was on the cover of all the teen magazines, and so the other kids knew that he was 13, and there's something in his voice that speaks to an incredible yearning in that particular song, and a yearning that would probably be familiar to many, many teenagers who are going through all the teenage stuff that teenagers go through, you know?
She's a dancing machine.
Had all these hits, and it all accumulated into kind of one fantastic sort of Jackson 5 concept that lingers to this day. You know, there's still talk about bringing back the Jacksons in Las Vegas for one more final billion-dollar blowout. So obviously, they do market research on this, so they know that the Jacksons still have this incredible audience.
Rock critic Stephen Davis was the ghostwriter for Michael Jackson's autobiography, Moonwalk. It's been a great pleasure speaking to you, Stephen.
Thanks. Always an honor to be on your ear. Thank you.
Stephen's also got a new book out about another superstar act called Watch You Bleed, The Saga of Guns N' Roses. And as Gustav bears down on us, who better to provide today's parting words than the Jackson 5? Here are the opening lines from one of their non-hits, the song The Eternal Light. Mother Earth told the people that the cold nights can be warm. Just get along with your brother. It's the shelter from the storm. It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jackie Leiden. When Barack Obama accepts the Democratic nomination tonight, it will be in a football stadium that seats 75,000 people. With giant video screens, a light show, and music, it will feel a lot like a rock concert. And that might be a new experience for many of the elected officials and delegates. So we sent NPR's Robert Smith to a Bruce Springsteen show in Pennsylvania to get some advice for delegates on proper stadium etiquette.
In the parking lot of Hershey Park Stadium, the hardcore Springsteen fans have assembled early. There are beers to drink and Born to Run on the car stereo. Catherine Regal says if you want to rock out in a stadium, you have to perfect the art of the tailgate.
We brought tenderloin, we brought some potatoes.
So live it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the tailgaters here are sitting around listening to Bruce Springsteen. Would you recommend in Denver that they sit around and listen to old Barack Obama speeches?
They could do that.
Get excited?
They could. I think that would be a good thing. That's what we're doing here. We're getting all psyched.
You see, rock concerts are tribal events, and it's all about fitting in. Regal says Obama fans should go all the way tonight. Wear the T-shirt. Paint the face with the big O.
You need to participate in it. You need to sing. You need to dance. That's the thing that makes it the most exciting.
And then if you're really into it, you get on somebody's shoulders, right?
Well, you can. If you weigh little enough, yes, you may.
But if Democratic delegates haven't been to a rock concert in years, they may find that some things have changed. With all the no-smoking rules, don't expect to hold up your lighter during the emotional parts of Barack Obama's speech. At concerts these days, people hold their glowing cell phones aloft. And a hearty applause may have worked in the small arena, but in a stadium you have to scream your head off. Diane Graziosi and Joe Tomtition show me the Springsteen way.
Woo!
So you would say the key is to get up in a high register, to clap and go, woo-hoo!
Born to Run, baby! Woo!
Okay, so let me transcribe that. That was Booyah Right Baby, is that right?
Born to Run Baby.
Tomtition has been to hundreds of concerts, he says. He can answer even the most delicate concert etiquette question.
It's still funny to scream out Freebird at a concert?
Yes, it still is. I scream it all the time.
So would you advise delegates to the Democratic National Convention at some point to scream out Freebird to Barack Obama? Would that be funny?
It would be funny because I'm a Republican. I would find that hilarious.
Democrats, not so much. Right before the lights went down in the stadium, I ran into Sean Drury. He says there's lots of similarities between Springsteen fans and Obama supporters. They both have dedication, and they both have enthusiasm. But he warns them, don't get carried away tonight in Denver.
Don't shout out while the artist, or in this case, the speaker, is speaking.
Don't shout out.
Absolutely not.
Don't yell out. Do the one about change.
Yeah, or don't, we love you, Barack. Yeah, he knows that, otherwise he wouldn't be there. I mean, etiquette is just basically let the speaker speak. I kind of wish more of the political conventions were like rock concerts. Then they wouldn't have an hour of primetime television. They'd be on a lot longer.
My interviews are officially over when Springsteen takes the stage. Rule number one in rock or politics, enjoy the show. Robert Smith, NPR News. I'm gonna raise a hog.
Cause you gotta work a leg.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do. There ain't no cure for the summertime blues.